Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the Russia investigation and Trump world's resistance to it are continuing to come to a head. Special counsel Robert Mueller probably doesn't need a Donald Trump interview to figure out whether to charge Trump with anything, but Mueller apparently wants one, and those discussions are taking place. On the Rachel Maddow show on MSNBC last night, President Obama's Attorney General Eric Holder said Mueller probably could make a technical case against Trump right now on obstruction of justice.
I think you're talking about a technical case as opposed to one that you might bring now. If one looks at the dismissal of James Comey and the reasons why the president told Lester Holt he did that, if you look at the president's attempts to try to get people who were the heads of the intelligence agencies to get involved in this matter, if you look at the president's actions on the airplane with regard to that statement, there are a variety of other things. I think you technically have a case of obstruction of justice. I'm not saying that this is a case that you would necessarily bring at this point, and I don't know what other evidence the special counsel has, but I think just on the basis of what has been reported in the media, and assuming that those reports are accurate, I do think that you have a technical case of obstruction of justice.
Former Attorney General Eric Holder on MSNBC last night. And the president has just a couple of more days to decide if he will approve release of the Democratic memo that responds to the Devin Nunes Republican one released last week that tried to cast doubt on some of the surveillance that helped launch the Trump and Russia investigation in 2016. The House Intelligence Committee Republicans voted unanimously this week to allow the Democratic memo to come out, but the president can still block it if he chooses to in the next few days. Now, one of the main issues in that subplot is the role of former British intelligence agent Christopher Steele, a Russia expert who, being paid by anti-Trump forces, compiled the so-called Steele dossier that contained unverified intelligence about Trump and Russia, ranging from alleged sex with prostitutes there to being a blackmail risk compromised by things Russia knew about his financial dealings. With me now is Washington Post correspondent Rosalind Helderman, who co-authored a very close look at Christopher Steele and the dossier. The article this week is called "Hero or Hired Gun: How a British Former Spy Became a Flashpoint in the Russia Investigation." Rosalind, thanks so much for giving us some time today. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me.
So one main point of your article seems to be that rather than see Christopher Steele as a functionary trying to gather dirt on Trump because he was being paid by Democrats and anti-Trump conservatives, he is a dedicated pro-democracy Brit from the intelligence agency in his past who was genuinely alarmed at what he was hearing about Trump in the course of that paid work. How much is that what your reporting shows about Christopher Steele?
Well, what we wanted to do with this story was to go back and try to recreate some of these events. Mr. Steele is being sued in two countries and is not giving interviews, but we were able to reach a number of people who were in contact with him throughout this time, people he actually went to seek advice for what he should do with the kind of information he was finding about Donald Trump. They included Richard Dearlove, who was the former head of MI6. Steele's former boss when they were both in the intelligence service, a former British diplomat named Andrew Wood, and a number of others who were able to give us some insight, because they were there at the time, into what Steele was thinking and feeling through this time. And I think what we tried to explore in the story was the kind of competing obligations that were paid on him, that were laid on him. You know, he was kind of in a very unusual role. Here he was, this guy who had a private business that had been hired by a client to do a job. He had contractual obligations to his client, which was complicated, but ultimately was the Clinton campaign. The information he was gathering belonged to them. It was proprietary, and it was being gathered for a particular reason, which was to help elect Hillary Clinton and defeat Donald Trump. But at the same time, people who know him tell us that at the time he felt very torn, because he also felt like he had these obligations as a former intelligence officer. He felt like that was an obligation that still accrued to him, even though he was no longer in that role, and that the information he was gathering was so alarming that he had to essentially call 911. He had to do something with it, and the thing he chose to do was to come to the FBI.
Right. So what led him to believe that Trump might be compromised, might be blackmailable by Russia?
So Christopher Steele was a guy with a large network of sources who knew about Russia. Russia was his expertise. It was the thing he had done when he was in government service for the British. He had been stationed for a time in Moscow and then sort of led the Russia desk for MI6 in London. And Russia was also his expertise when he entered the private sector in 2009 and took on corporate clients. It was kind of the calling card of his company. So he knew a lot of people over there. And so when he was hired by Fusion GPS, this American research firm, in June of 2016, he kind of put out feelers to his source network. He talked to people himself. He also had a kind of group of people he called collectors who were able to, you know, hit up other people for information, sometimes people who didn't even know that they were being kind of interviewed and spoken to for this particular purpose. And we're told that when the sort of initial information came in, he found it so hair-raising that he told people that it was like sitting on a nuclear weapon in his office. In fact, that very first report that he authored, because people forget this now, the dossier is actually a series of reports that were written over time from June to December of 2016. So his first report, written at the end of June, he found so disturbing and so sensitive that he did not think it could be trusted to electronic communications of any variety. And he actually dispatched a courier to take it to his paid client boss, Fusion GPS in Washington.
The Nunes memo says Steele was basically fired as a source for the FBI because he leaked some of his findings to the news media. Is that an accurate take on what happened? Your article does say he spoke to the Washington Post, among others, during that time.
Right. Well, to address your second piece of your question first, in the course of litigation that's now ongoing about the dossier, Steele himself has revealed that he met with some news organizations, including the Washington Post, in September and then October of 2016. So for that reason, those were off-the-record meetings. For that reason, we are confirming that that happened, but not revealing sort of the content of what was discussed because we consider that off-the-record obligation still in place.
Mm-hmm.
As for his relationship with the FBI, the Nunes memo is based on internal FBI documents, and so it may well be that that is how the relationship is characterized from the FBI end. We do know that Steele was sort of summoned to Rome on October 3rd, 2016, so a few weeks before the election, for a very intense briefing with the FBI. He had brought them his information in July, and by October, they wanted to know more. So they brought him to Rome, and they talked through everything he had, and then closer to the end of October, they included some of his information in this warrant to surveil Carter Page. Then what happened was at the end of October, your listeners might remember that James Comey came out and announced he was reopening the case on Hillary Clinton and her emails. Now, our understanding is that Steele had been told repeatedly by the FBI that that this investigation into Donald Trump or his associates was secret and was not going to come out because the FBI had a policy of not talking publicly about cases that might be seen to influence the electoral process close to an election. And he's told friends that he understood that, and that sort of was his going philosophy. And then they came out and made this this announcement about Hillary Clinton. And so he, working with his paid client or his paid bosses, Fusion GPS, decided that people needed to know about the FBI investigation into Donald Trump, and they started talking more about that.
You're talking about Jim Comey as FBI director, his public statement that they were reopening the case just like 10 days before the election, looking at Hillary Clinton's private emails. And so at that point, Fusion GPS, on behalf of the Clinton campaign, decided, well, they needed to do something, so they were going to So Steele agreed to put the Russia investigation, the investigation into possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, into the public sphere for the first time. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what Gwen Simpson, the head of Fusion, has testified to the congressional committees that are looking at this now. So on October 31st, we see this article written by David Korn of Mother Jones. He doesn't name Steele, but he talks about a Western intelligence source, and he talks about how there are these intelligence reports. He doesn't use the word dossier. No one had thought of that yet. But these intelligence reports that have been given to the FBI, and his piece sort of questioned, what's the FBI doing about this? Are they investigating? And so our understanding is that moment really causes kind of a break between Steele and the FBI. They had actually in Rome been talking about bringing him on as a paid contractor to continue this work after the election, after his contract with Fusion ended. And after that news story broke, the relationship essentially ends, is our understanding. There may be more that we don't yet know about that. But from the FBI side, apparently, according to Devin Nunes, they fired Steele. Friends of Steele have told us that they believe that he kind of cut off contact. He was angry. He didn't understand what was going on at the FBI. He said he wasn't sure he wanted to be a part of this, and he broke it off.
Listeners, if you have any questions for Washington Post correspondent Rosalind Helderman about Christopher Steele, her deep dive article, co-authored with another Washington Post correspondent, Tom Hamburger, this week, asked the question, hero or paid informant? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You can ask about Steele's motivations, content of the dossier, whatever's relevant, 212-433-9692 for Washington Post correspondent Rosalind Helderman. So Rosalind, Trump likes to dismiss the Steele dossier as full of fake stuff, but I think it's not fake. He reported things he had been hearing from Russian sources that were mostly unverified. That's very different from fake. Can you give us any kind of scorecard on what was in the dossier and what's been verified or debunked or is still uncertain?
I think that's extraordinarily hard. There's actually a good bit of literature out there about this, where people kind of go through line by line and try to assess this. You know, Senator Mark Warner, the vice chairman of the Intelligence Committee, said just last month that the dossier remains at this point unverified, but also not disproven, and that sort of gray area remains kind of amazing. People forget there are a few things on the dossier that get all of the attention, but the 36-page document has a lot of other things in there. It has a lot of sort of nuanced discussion about internal politics within the Kremlin and how the election operation was being viewed by different factions within the Kremlin, whether they thought it was being successful or not successful, whether it was risky or not risky. And a lot of that, U.S. intelligence probably has a good sense of whether that's accurate, but I don't think the public does. The core allegations as they relate to Donald Trump, that Russia has this compromising videos of him, that there was actual coordination. I mean, people might forget the dossier actually alleges that there was Trump Organization money being paid to hackers as part of the cyber hacking operation. Those things remain to this day unverified. And I think that we won't have a sense of whether or not some of those things can, you know, be knocked off the page. They're definitely not true, or if there's some truth to them until the Mueller investigation concludes.
Is there a way to say how verified any of the stuff is about Trump being a blackmail risk, compromised by what Russia might have had on his financial dealings, like Michael Flynn was compromised by what Russia had on his contacts regarding sanctions?
I think at this point, all we can say about that is that Trump has obviously strongly denied it, and there is no proof that's yet emerged that either of those two things are definitely true. Obviously, there's a lot to know about Russian money that was that came into the Trump organization, Russians who bought condos in Trump buildings, and the way that that helped prop up the Trump empire sort of in the 10 years before Donald Trump ran for president. president. But the notion that Russia was blackmailing Trump, either with financial information or with compromising videos, we have no evidence of that at this moment.
How verified? Well, what about the Trump and sex aspects of the Steele dossier? What's actually in the dossier about that?
Sure. Well, the dossier alleges that the Kremlin holds videos of Trump and that those videos relate to an incident at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Moscow where Donald Trump paid prostitutes, to urinate on a bed. That's the allegation. It's the famous P-tape allegation. It's the thing that seems to most upset Trump that is in the dossier. And, you know, I think we should very clearly say that we have no evidence that's true.
I wonder if official Washington is dismissing that less now, though, that we know about Trump's lawyer paying off porn star Stormy Daniels to be quiet about an old affair with Trump and that payment to her shortly before the election. I guess she had something on him. Do the rumors about Trump in Russia have new credence because of that, or are they being treated any differently since that revelation?
I think every person has to decide that one for their own, for themselves. I mean, I think that when we first learned about the dossier in January 2017, there were few people who didn't have some sense of Donald Trump's colorful past personal life, and that figured into how people saw these allegations. The Stormy Daniels allegation, you know, adds to that. But it's a far way from a brief affair with a U.S. porn star to precisely these allegations about prostitutes. So, I think I would be remiss if I didn't, you know, say again that we don't have evidence at this point that that's true.
Let's take a phone call. Sharon in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sharon.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted, I'm sorry, I haven't been listening for the past like 2 minutes. So if you went over this, please forgive me. But
sure.
There's something about this, the narrative of Christopher Steele that I wanted to raise. And that's Glenn Simpson in his testimony before the Senate committee. He says that the reason that Christopher Steele backed off from speaking to the FBI was that on October 31st, 2016, the New York Times published an article whose title was Investigating Donald Trump, FBI Sees No Clear Link to Russia, and that that became a confusing point because he had this relationship with the FBI, and then the Times had published this article saying, oh, there was some conclusion made that there was no link, and that spooked him a little bit, I guess pun intended, but that spooked him a little bit, and he backed off a little. And I was just wondering if you could give credence to that or if you have any more information about that.
Rosalyn?
If your guest, yeah.
That's a good point. So we talked a little bit about what was going on at the end of October that causes the rupture between Steele and the FBI. And your caller makes a good point that there were a few things going on. We went over that a little bit quickly. But one, and my understanding was it was the largest one, was the Comey announcement of reopening the Clinton investigation. And Steele's confusion over that announcement, given that he had been told that the FBI did not do that. But the other was indeed this New York Times story that suggested that the FBI was in fact not investigating Trump in Russia, or maybe that they had investigated it, but it was over. And so all of these things, according to Simpson, led to confusion, anger, fear, worry on the part of Steele. And so, you know, he's a British citizen. He doesn't have to work with the FBI. And I think from the Steele side of things, it was his decision to sort of back off at that point. Now, one thing we note in the story, which I think is interesting, is that the special counsel investigators actually went to London in September of 2016. So now we're talking nearly a year later, and debriefed Steele over 2 days. So the rupture happened, but eventually the special counsel decided that Steele had something he wanted to hear about and sent folks all the way to London to hear it.
Lisa in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering why there's so little mention of Paul Singer, who originally this was Republican money that got Steele started. And what does that have to do with all of this? Why is there so little mention? And how did it get over to the Democrats?
Right. It's a great question. And we mentioned at the beginning that Steele was funded that Steele was funded by both Democrats and anti-Trump conservatives. And right, the particular one, Paul Singer, who owns the Washington Free Beacon. And so to Lisa's question, I think a lot of our listeners, even who know that fact about the original funding for Steele's research into Trump and Russia, the fact that it came from anti-Trump conservatives, how did it, what was the sort of natural history of that? Why did they, and how did it become a Democratic thing?
So I'm really glad I got this question, because there's a lot of misconceptions about this, and the timeline is complicated and confusing, but it's actually not right that Steele's research was funded by Republicans. Let me lay it out for you. What happened was that Fusion GPS, this Washington firm, was first hired in the fall of 2015 by the Washington Free Beacon, which, as your caller noted, gets a great deal of funding from Paul Singer, to do research about Trump. So they were conservatives who were concerned about Trump's possible nomination, and they wanted to know more about him and his business. So Fusion gets started on this project, and they look at a lot of different things about Trump and his business. But one of the things they start to research is Trump and Russia. And they start to realize that if they want to know more about that, they need more from people who can talk about Russia, not just sort of open source documents, which is what Fusion generally does. So what happens is that the Washington Free Beacon contract ends. It ends in the spring of 2016. April or May is what Glenn Simpson has testified. At that point, Fusion is hired by Perkins Coie, which is a law firm that was working for the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC. So the contract is taken over by Perkins Coie. And then in June of 2016, Fusion hires Christopher Steele and his company. So while it is certainly true that Fusion did work for both conservatives and Democrats who were both opposed to Trump, the Steele work and what is now the Steele dossier was funded exclusively by Democrats.
Now, these dueling memos, Nunes and the Democrats, are about whether the Steele dossier was used legitimately to get a surveillance warrant on former Trump campaign advisor Carter Page. How does Carter Page show up in the dossier?
So Carter Page shows up in the dossier quite early and in a number of the reports as a Trump advisor who was key, according to Christopher Steele, to coordinating between the campaign and Moscow. We knew at the time, and Steele noted, that Carter Page, who was this kind of off-the-wall Trump advisor, went to Moscow in July of 2016 to give a speech at a university, which is kind of an unusual thing for a presidential advisor to do, to kind of jet off in the middle of advising a presidential campaign to Moscow. And the speech he gave, which was public, was rather critical of U.S. foreign policy and U.S. sanctions, which was interesting. Steele went on to allege that while he was in Moscow, he met with two particular Russian officials, the head of Rosneft, which is a Russian energy company, and a high-ranking official in Putin's government. And so that was the particular allegation that Steele had made, and which apparently in some way figures into the warrant that the FBI gets to monitor Page in late October. Now, Carter Page has denied that he met with those two men. He has denied it many, many times in many forums. But what's interesting is he has acknowledged that he had a brief greeting, with a different Russian government official, and that he had a rather long session. He went to a bar, he watched a soccer game with a guy who, while not the head of that energy company, Rosneft, was a key deputy to the head. So the allegations that Steele makes have been denied, but he definitely went to Moscow, and he definitely met with some folks while he was there.
George on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Good morning, Glenn. Today's Wall Street Journal has a major piece, and what it does is, in effect, the way I read it, is to largely attack anything that comes from Steele, and that they're pushing the same argument that the Republicans are alluding to, which is something that has a taint to it, in this case because of the, I guess, the Democrats behind it, and that Steele himself is biased and the rest. I'm wondering, first of all, if you've had the chance to read the editorial today, and as one who's covered this subject so thoroughly, if you have any comments about it.
Well, I haven't seen that particular editorial, although it sounds like it's making arguments that are now sort of familiar to the discussion.
That's an editorial. That rather than an article.
I see.
Is that right, George? It's an editorial?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And it sounds like from what you said, it's making the standard Republican arguments rather than adding a lot of new information like Rosalind's article in the Washington Post.
It's a bit surprising. That's why I'm wondering, because this whole, apparently the underlying issue behind this, of course, is to in every way possible discredit the source material for FISA and the rest, and thereby taint everything else that comes, obviously, as the fruit of it, given the way the legal system works.
In the Mueller investigation. So, George, thank you. And as we run out of time, it's relevant to ask right now, Rosalind, you report that Steele has been interviewed by Robert Mueller's team. I didn't know that before, personally. Is that a new revelation?
I think it has been reported. I think CNN maybe had a report on that a little while ago, but for some reason it didn't get a ton of attention, and so we thought it was a helpful fact to resurface. I don't know that the kind of length of time and the timeline had been reported before, so we can add that it was in September. They went to London for it, and they spent 2 days doing it, so they clearly thought he had you know, something worth listening to over something of an extended period of time.
Huh. Then all this Democratic versus Nunes memo business doesn't matter so much in a way, does it? Mueller's the only one getting at the truth.
Well, and we don't even know whether the Carter Page warrant actually figures into the Mueller investigation in any way. Nunes told us that the FBI opened a separate counterintelligence investigation on George Papadopoulos, someone we know does figure into the Mueller investigation, in late July, well before any of these things happened with the warrant. So, you know, it may be that this was all stuff that happened, worth looking at to see how the FBI interacts with sources, but not actually related to the Mueller probe.
Yeah. So last question. Why isn't Steele doing media interviews now to defend himself from these Republican attacks and Wall Street Journal editorials and try to clarify that he went to the FBI because he was really concerned about Trump and Russia and American and Western democracy rather than because he was a political hack?
Well, there are ongoing lawsuits. He's been sued in UK courts for libel by a Russian technology executive who was named in one of the dossier reports. There's also ongoing litigation in this country against BuzzFeed, which first published the dossier, and Glenn Simpson and Fusion. There was just a court hearing, I believe, earlier this week in London on the question of whether Steele will have to be deposed, which he and his lawyers are fighting. So friends of his say that he would certainly like to do that, but feels constrained until these lawsuits are wrapped up.
I see. And the Republican chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Chuck Grassley, I understand, has referred Steele for a criminal inquiry into whether he lied to the FBI. Do you know the basis of that?
Yes. According to Grassley, and it's also Lindsey Graham, they did that jointly. The FISA warrant submitted to the court indicated that it included some discussion of a particular article that had appeared in Yahoo News in late September 2016. And the DOJ told the court that FBI did not believe that Steele had directly provided information to Yahoo News. Later, as part of this litigation I was just mentioning in London, Steele has told the London court, the UK court, that he briefed Yahoo News in late September. So the basis of that is, why did the DOJ say that to the judge? Was it because they had been told by Steele that he did not talk to Yahoo or other media?
I see.
And if that's the case, they're asking, should he be investigated for lying to the FBI?
Steele might have lied about leaking. All right. Rosalind Helderman, co-author of a really interesting deep dive into Christopher Steele and the dossier in the Washington Post this week called Hero or Hired Gun, How a British Former Spy Became a Flashpoint in the Russia Investigation. Thank you so much for sharing this with us.
And thank you for having me.